with Virtual Hardwood. It's the NLSC Podcast, episode number 418. Thank you for joining us once again, Bossable Gamers. I am Andrew, with you as always, joined by my good friend Derek, a.k.a. D43.
I'm happy to be here again, as always. We have to start off this episode talking about our ridiculous session playing online co-op on NBA Live 07 for the Xbox 360.
Yeah, that surprised me when you hit me up with a message, let's play Live 07, because we were joking about that last week, you and your two copies of Live 07, and me with my ridiculous collection that includes 07. But yeah, I did not expect you to invite me to a game, but that was interesting, to put it one way.
Yeah, so I messaged Andrew to play NBA Live 07 because I thought, you know what, let's have a funny, loose experience, and maybe we can make something of it. Maybe it will be fun if, in some way, shape, or form, if we play cooperative. So we connected, and we were using the Philadelphia 76ers, and this is a fun Sixers team. Even though this team didn't even make the playoffs, they weren't able to even make the playoffs in like the 05-06 season, but they have, you know, they have Iverson, and they have, you know, Chris Webber, Iguodala, they have Korver, et cetera. And they have like a good team on paper. They're a fun video game team. So we throw them on the floor and we play against the legend Adam Morrison and the Charlotte Bobcats. And the silliness started like right out of the gate, you know, the absolutely terrible animations, the choppy overall gameplay, the missed dunks right off the front of the rim for absolutely no reason, the players transferring from one location to another incredibly fast and unrealistic, whether it be on a layup or a dunk, etc. The really strange ball physics. You know, I've talked about this before on past episodes. There's a lot of people out there that say that NBA Live 06 for the Xbox 360 was the beginning of the downfall for EA Sports NBA Live series. But you and I have both talked about this on and off air before. We both believe that it is absolutely NBA Live 07 that really hurt the series. Like, in my opinion, that is the start of the downfall of NBA Live.
I think if nothing else, it's far more damaging than 06. Because 06 was kind of a misstep in the way that it lost content. Losing Dynasty Mode, leaving out All-Star Weekend, historical content, things like that. Like, there was a lot of things to criticize about 06, and as much as I do enjoy that game now, that I still have my criticisms about it. But yeah, 07, that was the one where anybody who was still really flying the flag for NBA Live was kind of like, oh, yeah, this is a real problem for the series moving forward, because, as you said, the gameplay, you had those weird animations without the transitional animations, so you fly across the key to dunk on the other side of the rim, because there's no contextual animation for where you are at that time, so it picks the best one it can and just snaps you into position, warps you into position for whatever move you have to do. Just the weird amount of missed dunks, as you said. That first layup that I missed, in fact, a lot of the layups and dunks that I missed, I was trying to use Freestyle Superstars moves, which are supposed to be the OP moves in 06 and 07, but they couldn't even finish those animations. They couldn't finish those moves because they were just missing really badly. I couldn't believe it. It's been a while since I played 07, and I hadn't really messed around with Freestyle Superstars for a while in that game, but yeah, just terrible.
Yeah, you were trying to do some fun stuff, as was I, as far as like in the ISO game, spin moves, you know, crossovers. And it's just no play really finished well or realistically, right?
Yeah.
Like, each play looked ridiculous. And I just don't understand how the developers, the programmers for NBA Live 07, like, even in the temple, when you step on the floor with Tracy McGrady and the frame rate's ridiculous and he's transitioning so awkwardly on his jump shot, the way he's moving alone on the court with the ball looks just absolutely ridiculous, and it doesn't feel good either. I just don't understand how the programmers, even at that time, the programmers and developers were willing to find that as acceptable for a release of a basketball video game. That's the game that damaged the Live series the most. I will say this, Andrew and I, we started out being down in the first quarter. And as usual, when we play on the same team, we regrouped. And, you know, we didn't give up. And we ended up winning this game by, I think, I don't know what, like 6 points.
Something like that, yeah. 70-64, I believe,
Adam Morrison tried some heroics and hit some outside shots. He threw it down in the fourth quarter and whatnot. But it wasn't enough. Iverson had like six steals and, you know, Weber led the team in scoring, et cetera, I believe. So like it was a win for Andrew and I, but I wouldn't say that the entire session was a win because that game is just absolutely not fun to play.
It was a war of attrition. Let's put it that way. We got the win. We were able to beat the great Mustachio, the great Adam Morrison. We were able to overcome his heroics, as you said. The funny thing is that there were a couple of moments. You know, we made a nice play where you cut to the basket and made a pass and you finished. And it was kind of, it wasn't great, but it was kind of like, oh, that's kind of like a basketball strategy that we were able to pull off with this horribly broken game. But it's this one moment of kind of acceptable amid a sea of, what were you thinking? And I put the what were EA thinking in the title of the video that you sent me to upload to the YouTube channel. And as I said on the Twitter post, and I think I said in the description of the video as well, what's the bigger challenge? The broken mechanics of the game or the great Adam Morrison? And of course, the great Adam Morrison put up a great challenge. But I think ultimately the broken mechanics were probably the bigger hurdle we had to jump over.
Yeah, there were a couple things that we did that were like true basketball, you know, plays or true basketball moves that in other games, you know, maybe they could even make the top 10, right? Or, you know, we could feel super good about them. There was a play where you found me cutting, you were using Iverson and I cut with Iguodala and you threw a bounce pass in between two defenders. That's on the highlight reel. And then I dunked it at the hoop. And the ridiculous, like, animation transition where Iguodala just kind of zooms to the ball and the ball gets lost in the weird frame rate and Iverson throws it weird and then I propel to the hoop, I do a rocket dunk and it looks weird and it's just like, you know, for what a good basketball play that we ran, like a backdoor cut and, you know, bounce pass and everything, it just didn't look good. Right? So that's the problem. And even like things where we would get a steal with Iverson at like half court and we'd start like, you know, trucking it down the floor and getting ready to finish the play. They dribble so weird in that game.
And like slow.
And slow. But there's like a parachute, it looks like, almost coming out of the back of their lower part of their jersey. I don't know. It's supposed to like signify they're moving forward or something. And then their arm is, they're not dribbling realistically. They're like, their arm is like straight out in front of them. And they're just kind of like barely moving their arm and they're just slapping the ball in front of them while they're running forward. It is just so awkward looking. I just don't know how that got into production and that they were willing to release that game, because how could they not see that that would be damaging to the series?
I mean, I'm sure they knew that it was something they were going to have to weather. I mean, I remember them showing it to us at the community event. I spent a bit more time, honestly, with the Xbox, the original Xbox version, because it was going to be the PC port, so that's kind of what I wanted to report on for our community. But the build that we played was very rough. If you can believe, it's even rougher than what we got at the end of the day, because there was even more warping and strange warping through the backboard and magically warping over to other sides of the court. It was very broken, very early build. So I think what they did was that they rebuilt the engine or brought in some new tech that year that they thought was, that they hoped was going to be better and more realistic and be able to do things that they couldn't on current gen, what was then current gen, but it wasn't ready. At 1 year, it was not enough to develop that technology and have it ready to go. And they got to the release date and had to go gold and just said, okay, we're just going to have to weather it. Because back then, the idea of cancelling an NBA Live game was kind of unheard of. They'd cancelled the 3DO version of NBA Live 96 because the 3DO was on its way out. That being said, they did actually cancel the PS3 version of NBA Live 07, so I suppose that was in the books, that was on the cards at the time. But yeah, that they just had to run with it because they didn't want to miss a year. But missing a year on that generation might have actually saved the series in the long run. But incredibly rough, shocking what happened with NBA Live 07, really.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of the Live 07 for PS2, but it definitely is a better basketball game than Live 07 for 360. let's put it that way, by a long shot. But, you know, we were talking about it because after we played a game of NBA Live 06, and the game is just, NBA Live 06 is so much more fluid, right? It's from the same cloth of like Live 06 for PS2 and Live 04. And in my opinion, it actually feels a little bit, feels like a slower version of NBA Live 2003 and NBA Live 2004. That's kind of the way I look at NBA Live 06 for the 360. But just the frame rate is a lot smoother. The transitions and animations are so much smoother. You can feel good about making, you know, basketball plays. You feel good about, you know, playing defense, all of that stuff. Like, at Live 06 shouldn't have been that much better from a gameplay standpoint than NBA Live 07, but it was.
Well, you look at NBA Elite 11 being such a downgrade from NBA Live 10. If you change the tech and the tech's not ready, then that's what you're going to get.
Right, exactly. But yeah, we did. We played NBA Live 06, and we used that same Sixer. We used the Philadelphia 76ers again. And we played against the Bucks, who were absolutely ridiculous in that game. The very unforgiving CPU in that game. They weren't missing anything, and they just stifled everything at the hoop. We made a good run at it. We ended up losing at the end of the game. The fouls were absolutely ridiculous in favor of the Bucks in that game. They were, you know, every time they went to the hoop, it was like there was a foul. Even if I was playing straight up defense, I felt like there was a foul every time. And then when we were getting fouled, we couldn't hit any free throws. The free throw mechanics are pretty botched overall, in my opinion, in NBA Live 06. There's no consistency really to them. And so both of us were struggling mightily from the line, and we actually ended up losing the game, in my opinion, because of our free throw shooting.
Oh, you talk about basketball basics, missing at the free throw line and losing the game. Absolutely. 100% on that one. We're actually more like about 10% or whatever it was. Did we even make 10% of our free throws in that game? That was, I don't think we've ever shot worse from the line in a game, you and I.
I think both of us only made one. So I want to say we were like 2 for 17. Like, it's ridiculous. And by the way, there's no reason for it, because Andrew and I knock down our free throws on like Live 06, right? Like, we'll knock down our free throws on, you know, Live 07 and whatnot. But on Live 06, we just can't hit them. I don't understand it.
You know, that's the funny thing. Maybe the one thing that 07 has over 06, apart from the addition of franchise, but with Dynasty Mode, but of course you have to want to play the games to enjoy Dynasty Mode, is that they did fix free throws. They added some on-screen guides, some feedback that said you're too far left, too far right, too early, too late with the release, etc. It's the old down-up-on-the-right-stick method that they used for a couple of years there, replicating a shooting form with what you're doing on the right stick. You can see the theory, the execution is very poor in 06. It's very unforgiving, very sensitive if you're slightly to the left or right. And when I say slightly, I mean slightly, compared to 07. And again, here I am praising 07 after we've just been rightfully criticizing it, but it is the one area where they did kind of fix things, free throws. But it's just so sensitive in 06 that, but there's no reason we should have missed as often as we did. At first, I thought, oh, you know, I'm compensating for that slight delay with online gaming. But no, it was happening to you as well. And even I thought I was getting the timing down pretty well for most things, jump shots included, and passing and everything else. But free throws, no, you just couldn't do it. So we have decided to ratchet down the free throw difficulty, at least until we can get used to the method again. And certainly turn down the fouls, because they did interrupt the flow of the game. And you look, they're pretty low. The foul sliders are pretty low by default. So I think they were aware that it was a little bit too sensitive in 06. But it has to go down a little bit more. So we'll see how we go and with the next game make slider adjustments as necessary. But man, Desmond Mason, what a video game legend as far as an opponent.
Desmond Mason was just dunking all over us. And usually, you know, shot blocking is pretty fun in that game. We talked about that on a prior podcast. Like timing blocks, getting blocks at the rim, stifling people, etc. But you couldn't stifle Desmond Mason in that game. He was just dunking all over us. I'd say he probably had 8 to 10 dunks in that game. Some in the half court in traffic, some on the break, etc. We also got killed by Mo Williams in a pretty big way in that game. I do want to say one thing. You know, what one game that actually has pretty good right stick free throw shooting, who they implemented it pretty well, is actually College Hoops 2K8, which we're having the tournament on. And instead of, you know, on the right stick, pulling it down and then up to release, they have it where you pull it down and then you release it at the optimal release point. So it's not two motions, you know, down, up. It's just down and then release. And people are shooting free throws other than 707. For some reason, he couldn't get it centered or whatnot. But everybody in the tournament is shooting free throws very well using that right stick on College Hoops 2K8. Now, one thing that they messed up on is when they first released the game, they only had the tilt option.
The six-axis
The computer, yeah. You had to tilt the controller, which was definitely not the way to go, and they realized that. So what they did was they patched the game and brought in the right stick option in the gameplay settings. But one thing where they still came up short is they still should have given people an option to use the shoot button, right, to shoot the free throw. But unfortunately, they kept it, you know, 100% to either that right stick or the six-axis tilt. But, yeah, the tournament, it's been a blast. It's been incredibly successful. The Sweet 16 is almost completely played through. We only have one game left. And I was the unfortunate victim of the NLSC Top 10 Play of the Week, where John Jake Gaming beat me with a 3 from about 25 feet contested to win our game. I was UConn. He was Ohio State. But all of the games have been super fun to watch, and almost every single game has been incredibly competitive until the final buzzer. So I can't say enough about how Parsec has worked for the tournament. I can't say enough about how everybody's been a good sport in the tournament as well. It's just been super successful. You know, I talked to you about this tournament off air. I was like, you know, this is the first time we're doing this with 16 people, because normally I've been running the tournaments with only 8. And I was saying to you, you know, hopefully it goes as smooth as I think it's going to. Let's see how it works for everybody. And it's really passed the test with flying colors.
It really has. I do want to mention, first of all, that I think you've used up all your luck when it comes to buzzer beaters with that three, the half-court three with Michael Finley in NBA Live 10. That's where all your luck ran out.
So let me tell you something. If you want to have an epic game on any basketball video game, more than likely you're going to want to play me. Because it seems like a lot of my games, including in the tournaments, are just going down to the final shot. And unfortunately, over the last couple of months, I've been beat by 4 game winners. Luckily, you know, out of the 3 tournaments we've run, I've won 2 of them. So I can hang my hat on that. But, you know, I got beat with a buzzer beating layup by Tecmo Bowl, GGL. During the NBA Jam on Fire Edition tournament, during our series, he hit it with Magic Johnson. I got beat by a game-winning 3 in this tournament by John Jake Gaming, a deep contested 3 in order for him to move on in the tournament. I got beat in the finals of the NBA Jam on Fire Edition tournament in one game by Stildo33 hitting a buzzer-beating 3 with Larry Bird, another double-team contested shot. And King J. Mace also, when we connected and played an early version of his Blacktop mod, he hit a 3 in the corner, I want to say with either Earl Monroe or Walt Frazier, I can't remember, and that won him the game. So I guess if you want a super epic game where you sweat a lot, where it's super competitive, and you know you want to have a good chance of hitting a game winner, you want to play me. I guess that's what we learned here.
Well, I still need to get you back for that half-court 3, you know, that clutch play. And Hashim Thabeet. And I'm surprised that Hashim Thabeet did not lead you to victory. I mean, again, the video game legend, Hashim Thabeet.
I went to him a little bit too much at the end. And I want to say something first. So the Finley game winner that Andrew's talking about on NBA Live 10, where I did a spin move and chucked it from about three-quarter court, and it went high-arcing nothing but net to win the game. My brother Nick, you know, we've had 43 weeks now of the NLSC top 10, and he's 100% sure that that is the best play that we've seen in the top 10. And it's hard to argue, because that is just a ridiculous shot in a ridiculous way to end, you know, a game and whatnot and win a game. As far as Thabeet, so I made a mistake. When I played him, I did something that I'm so critical of on the show, and something that I'm strictly against most of the time, especially in a, like a true competitive setting. I kind of played that game almost in like a faking sim way, right? I slowed it up. I was trying to run plays more than I normally do. I was swinging it when I didn't necessarily need to swing it. And that ended up hurting me. It's almost like I played completely different than I do when I'm just connecting with people, right? Like I've connected with Stildo. I've connected with Nate Stasho from the, you know, NBA Live 2001 Legends. I've connected with King J Mace. I've connected with, you know, multiple people now on College Hoops 2K8. And in every game, I've won and played very well, even if my team wasn't better overall. Right. So what ended up happening was, is I kind of got into this tournament game and I started playing different, and it ended up really biting me at the end. And I deserve to lose as a result. I think the next time I play a tournament, whether it be on College Hoops 2K8 or whatnot, you know, or NCAA Basketball 09 or NBA Street Volume 2, I'm just going to make sure I go hard, you know, the whole time and not like change up the way I play to, you know, to fit a certain type of play style. I will say this. I watched Nate Stasho's game and I watched the tape of Stildo 33's game, and where they were incredibly strong is they just kept the pressure on all game and they didn't change the way that they played. They were like, you know what? If I have this layup, if I have this lane and this is going to work for me every single time, I'm going to utilize it until it stopped. Right. And both of them won their games and played incredibly well as a result. So they've moved on to the Elite Eight. So, you know, shout out to them. But I will say to anybody playing in the tournaments, the worst thing that you possibly can do is kind of change your play style in order to either make good highlights or to, you know, quote unquote, fake sim, like just play your game. And unfortunately, I didn't do that.
I mean, it's a mistake that people make, that the teams and players make in real life, is it not? Like taking the foot off the pedal. But do you think, to that point, some of it is a desire to be sporting in these tournaments? I mean, obviously we want the sportsmanship in the tournaments, but sometimes if you're really running up the score, do you think sometimes there's that thing, oh, I've got to ease off because I don't want to be that jerk that keeps just pounding my opponent when this is supposed to be a sporting competition? I mean, do you think that comes into play, like a sense of sportsmanship that you kind of trip over and stop being competitive?
I think that can happen. I absolutely think that can happen. Unless you're Stildo 33 and you just continue to put the pedal to the metal for all 24
mercy.
Minutes.
No mercy from Stildo.
Up his game. Yeah, no mercy at all. You saw the highlights of that game. But I think that can happen. I think that John played incredibly well. I think that one of his strengths was not forcing the issue. As far as I think what he was doing was he was trying to find the best shot on every single possession. And I think he did a pretty good job of that. And, you know, that clutch three, it could have gone either way and it went in, and it's an amazing shot. And that's why it's number one in this week's NLSC top 10 plays of the week, but definitely kind of like a humbling moment for me to lose that game. And I almost think I needed it after winning those first two tournaments, because it kind of is a kind of a wake up call to be like, hey, listen, don't change the way you play. Like, just play hard.
Yeah, don't go away from what brought you to the dance. Absolutely.
Right, exactly. You know, the next tournament that we run, it's probably going to be on NCAA Basketball 09 or NCAA Basketball 10, and then followed by a tournament on NBA Street Volume 2, which I really want you in on. I really want you to play in that tournament because you do love that game. And we had a blast when we linked up and played it recently. But, you know, I just love that everybody's enjoying the tournaments. Everybody's being good sports. They are really excited for their games, etc. I'm really happy the way things are going.
Now, we can't say enough about how well the tournaments have gone, how much everyone's been having fun with them. If having fun watching the highlights, you can see that from the comments on YouTube and the reactions on Twitter when we post those highlights. And everyone, as you said, just so sporting and such goodwill that shows that people do want to have this competitive scene that's free of the toxicity, which is a shame that it does bleed into the online scene in 2K and whatnot. You know, you mentioned the the game winners. And I've had a couple in my 2K14 my career. One of them I had to beat my beloved Bulls at the buzzer with a three-pointer. But, you know, it's what I want. I'm competing in my career. You have to, if you're not playing for your favorite team in my career in a franchise mode, you are going to have to beat them at some point. But, you know, Derek, there's a lot of moments in basketball games that remind you of that thrill of real sports. You know, a big dunk, an ankle-breaking crossover and whatnot. But there's something special about a game winner, especially in a game that doesn't have green releases. Because, as you know, in those games, you can have an excellent release, a perfectly timed release, an A-plus shot quality, that it, you know, it's the perfect shot, you're wide open, whatnot, and it's still just bricks, which is kind of realistic. That does happen, but it often feels very random, and you kind of feel screwed over sometimes when that happens in games. So when you can make a game winner like the couple that I had, and I've sent along to you, one of which was in the top 10 this week, you know, it just feels so gratifying to make a jump shot in those situations and get that game winner. And once again, I really enjoyed putting some real commentary to those highlights that I sent along to you.
No, what I liked about that second game winner that you hit, what I like about the commentary you put over it is it says in the commentary, he does it again. And how fitting is that? Because, you know, you have a game winner that was in the top 10 this week versus the Raptors. And it's like they're referencing that game winner, even though it's, you know, commentary that you pulled from real highlights. So I think that's really cool. Obviously, your NBA 2K14 game winner against the Chicago Bulls, that will make it into one of the newer top 10s, whether it's next week or the week after and whatnot. But love seeing the highlights, love seeing the commentary over them, love seeing that you're still having so much fun with my career on NBA 2K14. And like you had stated, you just finished season two.
I have, and actually did manage to lead the league in all five categories, which is ridiculous, but first time I've been able to do that in my career. And I was, once I got there, ran about 60 games in, and I'm looking and seeing that I'm the leader of all the categories, that became a new challenge. Because I knew that I was going to be able to get into the playoffs with the team, because, you know, we were already the best record in the league. I didn't see that going anywhere. Didn't see us dropping out of the... Well, I don't think mathematically we could have dropped out of even the top eight at that point. But when I saw that, I thought, okay, here's the new goal. Because I'm already averaging a triple-double as well, so which I have done before in 2K19, so I know that I can do that. I know I'm going to do that again. So I've already on track to beat that challenge. Let's see if I can lead the league in the five major categories. And I did. That was very satisfying. The only problem with it is that compared to 2K19 and other more recent games, some of the presentation as far as acknowledging records isn't as good. I mean, you've got that great Walking with Legends pop-up that comes up a little bit too often, to be completely honest with you, but it is very cool in 2K14. But yeah, when I broke John Stockton's assist record, which I have also done before in 2K19, when I broke that for the total assists in a season and was on track, of course, and did get the record for assists per game as well, it didn't acknowledge that anywhere, where it does in 2K19. So that is something that they have improved upon in later games. And of course, that also goes for franchise modes as well. It mentions when you break those records, as you well know, having done that yourself in my league and my NBA and whatnot. So that was a little bit of a disappointment that it didn't acknowledge that. But now I'm interested to see if, when it says Walking with Legends in next season, whether it has my new record up there. Because it should, but I've got a feeling it doesn't.
Yeah, they do that better in the newer games. Like when we were, you know, starting to break records with Michael Jordan's steals in our Legends season on NBA 2K22. You know, when it's not even when you pass the first name. It's like, you know, he's now past Don Boosie, right? In, you know, single season steals record or something like that. And then, you know, they work their way up to Alvin Robertson. And then when you pass Alvin Robertson's single season steals record, you know, they do something else for it, et cetera. So they definitely do better. They've done better over the last few years as far as tracking that and, you know, giving you credit basically when it happens on the virtual hardwood and whatnot. I do want to point out, though, that Andrew did finish his second season 72-10, not 73-9, 72-10, and he's not happy about it.
Well, no, because I thought, well, this is a chance to set the record, because, of course, in this reality, this is the 14-15 season in my career, the second season in 2K14. the 73 and 9 hadn't happened yet. So 73 and 9 would have been a first, a record in this this retro reality, if you will. But last game of the season, I thought, you know, it's the Hawks, we've already beaten them. I think every other game we played in that season beat them fairly handily. So this is going to be 73 and 9. So, and maybe that was my mistake, again, taking things for granted and kind of taking it a bit easy on them. And they were hanging around with me all game. And teammates were kind of a bit, they weren't very aggressive either. Normally I'm racking up assists left and right, but it was kind of a battle to get to the double-digit assists in this one. And I'm even getting to the rim, and I'm getting blocked by Andrei Kirilenko, who they traded for. They've got Andrei Kirilenko in this reality, the Atlanta Hawks. So, yeah, I actually ended up losing that game. I lost it at the buzzer. We were down by one with about 10 seconds left. I missed a shot, then Carmelo Anthony missed a shot, and then Thaddeus Young grabbed the rebound and put it back up with 1.6 seconds left, and thought, okay, great, Thaddeus Young has given us the victory, and defending as much as we could, but Lou Williams had enough space, he got up a three, and beat us at the buzzer. And here's the thing, although it's frustrating, at the same time, I don't mind, because there's a part of me that likes that realism the challenge of the possibility of losing. And I know that sounds like a weird mentality, but I also like bouncing back from a loss. And if I lose in a season, there's realism in that, as opposed to going 82-0. So, and it now gives me more motivation to go into the playoffs and try and sweep my way through the playoffs. And of course, at the end of the day, it also comes back to me not being able to get the job done and get the win. So you have to take responsibility for that. And yeah, but it was kind of a shame to not get that 73-9, equaling 72-10, still a pretty good season when it's all said and done. It's funny because a lot of the losses came in the second half of the season, kind of like we were fatigued or putting too much pressure on ourselves to get the record. And much like the Bulls 72-10 in 96 and the Warriors 73-9 in 2016, it was kind of like that. A lot of the losses came in the back end of the season. But now we're still entering the playoffs with a lot of momentum. It's funny, I'm looking at the social media, and this is actually a very realistic element of the game, the dumb tweets, if you will, in the virtual social media. There's a couple of tweets saying, oh, the 76ers might be able to win the championship. That, you know, they've got a chance. And I'm like, we just went 72-10, and we've been winning our games by an average of 18 points per game. I think we're the number one contenders, if you will. But it kind of speaks to that.
No, you couldn't beat the Hawks and Lou Williams.
That's true. Yeah,
I'm sorry, but maybe that, you know, change the tide. Or are you also saying that maybe I should include Lou Williams' game winner by the CPU in the NLSC top 10 plays of the week?
I should have got it. The top 10 plays against us. But actually, there is a play that you would have liked to get in the second last game of the season. Mark Everett, the generated rookie for the Celtics. I'll send you the footage after we're done here. Just went up against Thaddeus Young and just did this huge cockback dunk where he just cocks it back to the side with one hand, you know, palming the ball, cocks it back, and just swings it round for this huge facial. I've never seen that animation before in 2K14, and I'm kind of jealous that I didn't get to pull it off myself.
Mark Everett sounds like a Celtic. Like, the name sounds like a player the Boston Celtics would draft. Like, it makes me think of a guy like, I don't know, like Matt Wenstrom, who the Celtics had, who was just kind of like a useless center. That, you know, we had in the past. Not trying to insult Matt Wenstrom, but he wasn't good for us. I don't even remember how many games he played for us, but he wasn't very good. But yeah, Mark Everett sounds like a Celtic. You know, it is interesting the way we look at computer highlights, right? You know, if we don't do them, you know, do we really want to post them, right? Do you really want to post Lou Williams' game winner and you know, relive that scenario? You know, whether it be posting it to YouTube or, you know, posting it to Twitter, et cetera. So it is interesting that you didn't capture that. I'm not saying that you did it because you were mad. You didn't capture it because you were upset.
But I mean, I'll say that. I'll say that I didn't want to capture it and relive it.
Okay, so
yeah.
Andrew was upset. He was being a sore sport about Lou Williams, and that's completely understandable.
No, but yeah, absolutely right. But to that point, Mark Everett is actually the front runner for Rookie of the Year. I think he was a top five pick by the Celtics, actually, in this year too. And I know a lot of people do like the real draft classes, which you can't do in my career anyway, so it's a moot point. But I always like the generated rookies because those generated rookies become the video game legends, you know, and there's Boris was it Borislav Perko in Kenny's NBA Live 10 Dynasty, the next level, just became a legend that we all loved hearing about his exploits. So these, and there's Alan Wall on the 76ers, who's got a very unique jump shot animation. There's Ken Caffey on the Pistons. I showed you that animation. I think he's got Kevin Duckworth's jump shot, and it's a sight to behold. Quite frankly, very unique, to say the least. So I love that they've got this personality for these generated rookies. So that's what I really love about Year 2 and the movement. Of course, LeBron James went to LA to join Kobe. Kobe actually went down with a knee injury on the last game of the season, so even though the Lakers got to the fourth seed with LeBron out for most of the year, Kobe leading the way, Kobe's just gone down with injury, but now they've actually won the first game of their first round series thanks to Jody Meeks. So there's all kinds of stories to go on in Year 2 of my career. And it's the same with Franchise Modes, Dynasty, Association, whatever. So I always encourage people, if you can play into that Year 2 and see things, if you are playing with, starting out with real NBA rosters and whatnot, seeing that reality take shape in My Career or Franchise Mode, and seeing where players go, and seeing that those generated rookies, and seeing how they become legends, it's really fun and rewarding. I absolutely encourage people to, if you can have and you have the time, to play at least a couple of years in these modes and see how the league changes in Year 2 and beyond.
Oh, I agree. And I definitely agree about the generated players because, so NBA 2K17, all three of us on the same team, my brothers and I, we finished a season. We won the championship. We go into the next season and we decided, hey, you know, we don't normally do this, but let's look through the draft. Let's see who we can take, see who looks interesting. And there's this guy in the draft. Tell me if, you know, listeners, if you've gotten this guy before, you've seen this guy. His name is Dick Knight. And he's this 6'5" Neanderthal looking guy. He's got a long beard, like blue eyes and like long hair. And we were like, oh, my God, that's the unique guy that we want to take. Like, we want that guy on our team. And so we ended up taking him. And his 3-point ratings were really high, but he was super slow. So we're just, you know, trying to find a way to get him involved in that second season of our, and no, we're not in my career, right? We're just like playing like a my league. So that's the only difference here, but you know, it's still a generated player. It's still a generated rookie, right? But anyway, so what we're doing is we're trying to find ways to set picks for him, get his average up, you know, have him, you know, spotting up for threes and finding him in those spots and everything. And of course, he's playing absolutely terrible. I mean, we're winning every game, but he's shooting like 25% from the floor. He's so slow and ineffective. But, you know, Dick Knight is somebody that we joke about now. That player, we text about it when my brother Mark comes over to visit and stuff. We talk about Dick Knight, etc. So yeah, it is absolutely awesome to, you know, have the generated names in there, the generated players, and they can become legends in one way or another in your house.
Oh yeah, I mean Caveman Dick, right? That should be his nickname.
That's what he looks like. No, he looks like a caveman. If you go into a my league, I don't care if you have to sim a whole season. I'm talking to our listeners here. Go into the draft and tell me if you see this guy. His name is Dick Knight. And I don't know. He's like 60-something overall. Like, he's not good in the draft. We took him because he was unique. But, yeah, he's a funny-looking guy in the game.
So, no, it's definitely something to do, playing beyond that first season. And just seeing the way the league evolves, and you see the players showing up in different places, you see the strange trades and whatnot. So it's absolutely worth doing. But we were talking about faking sim and looking for challenges and maybe getting too complacent, changing up the style and whatnot. And actually leads into a question that KidCash202, at KidCash202 on Twitter, sent into us. And said, are there any house rules that you implement to keep games versus the CPU competitive and fair? As I go back and play these older games, I know I could dominate if I wanted to, but would that be any fun? And yeah, that's an interesting point to create challenge. You know, do you give yourself any disadvantages and whatnot, or any house rules, as he says, to keep it competitive?
So I guess my answer to this is yes and no. And you'll see why. It's not as black and white as, you know, we go all out all the time, or we don't, or we fake sim. There's a time and place against the computer where if you want to play a style where you want your stats to end up being more realistic and you want to kind of spread the wealth and get more players involved, et cetera, then, you know, you may be in a sense faking sim, or in a sense passing up an opportunity to dominate with one player and score. Instead of scoring 80 points with one player, you're passing up a lot of those shots to get the ball to a role player, right? Because you want them to get closer to their real life scoring average, right? Or maybe you're using a player more on defense in order to get to their realistic steals average or realistic block average. So I think that you can go 100% playing like that, but you have to keep in mind that one of the reasons why you're playing like that is, you know, for stats. So it's like win at all costs, but also to get my stats and to get the stats looking realistic. So, you know, the way my brothers and I look at it is when we play the computer, we're trying to win at all costs. But if we're in a position where we want the stats to be realistic, we're going to try to win at all costs while trying to get those realistic stats. Now, I will say this. A lot of the older games are tougher than the newer games. My brother Nick and I talk about it. Like, going and play on the hardest level, if you're playing NBA 2K11, NBA 2K12, 2K13, and 2K14 as well, we call it the old cloth. Like, there's the way this, the computer plays on those older games, it's like they don't miss. Like, they can be semi-contested or sometimes draped, and they're just hitting shots all over the floor. They're, you know, doing mid-air passes when you try to contest them at the hoop to finding a shooter, and then they're knocking down shots. They play excellent defense normally on a lot of those older games, especially the 2Ks. So we find it actually harder against the computer on the like 360 generation 2Ks than we do on the newer ones.
Plus, you don't have mechanics like a green release and some of the other mechanics that the hip riding and whatnot that have made it easier in recent games. But certainly when you know that you can get a guaranteed release point that is going in every single time, unless it's blocked or you're behind the backboard or something, that makes it a lot easier than when you're not just trusting a dice roll. As I said earlier in the show, even with an excellent release, an A-plus shot quality, it can still brick if the dice roll is unkind or unlucky. So without that green release mechanic in older games, you don't always have that guaranteed bucket.
No, 100%. You know, there's certain things that you have to be kind of cognizant of, right? So like NBA 2K17, there is a glitch where the shooting guard or small forward on the wing will move out of your way sometimes when you're dribbling, you're doing a hard dribble up the floor, even like in when the defense is already back, he's just like moving out of the way. So you can just like run by him to the hoop and score. So I think that's kind of also what he's probably talking about is do you take that path, right? Do you take advantage of that glitch in the game where that player moves out of the way and you just run to the hoop and dunk it? Or do you kind of like hold back and be like, okay, this is a glitch. We're going to let him get back in to position. And then we're going to try to beat the computer without that glitch being there or that exploit. I guess it depends on the way you look at competition in these games, right? If you don't feel good about using that exploit, don't use it. But if you do feel still good, you're like, hey, it's in the game. I'm out. And that's what Stildo would do, by the way. He would just run it down. if this was Stildo, he would take advantage of that 100% of the time. He would run by the computer and he would just stuff it. But yeah, I guess it just depends on, you know, what you feel good about and what you don't. As far as making the game harder, I think that usually on the hardest level on most games, it's a pretty good challenge, especially on a lot of the older titles. So I don't really think too much about that. But yeah, I think that's a really good question by him, because I do think that that crosses people's minds a lot. And I also think it's why there's a lot of people out there that do fake sim, right? Because they're like, you know what? I'm just going to try to make this game as realistic, as realistic as possible, and not just exploit all the issues with the game.
Well, I'm kind of that way, I'll admit. I like to, when I'm playing franchise mode or a dynasty mode, whatever, I do like to play with players and do things that they would do in real life. So I do like to play a realistic style. But if it comes down to it, you know, if there is an exploit and I need a bucket, I'm probably going to go to it. But I find it's boring if I constantly use a strategy that I know. Like for example, Freestyle Superstars in Live 06 PC. I know I could drive every time and use the outside Freestyle Superstars scorer moveset to get one of those cheesy layups. I try not to. I don't like to do that because then that gets boring just spamming that move over and over again. So I do like to play realistically. I do like to take those mid-range shots and those three-pointers and you know, try for alley-oops and pick-and-roll plays and whatever. But if it comes down to it, if I need a bucket, if I need to win the game, I will throw that aside. So I guess my house rules in that respect against the CPU is I do like to play a realistic style and something that resembles what you might see on TV, at least, and try to win that way. You know, try to use the players to their strengths and weaknesses and use them in a way that you would how they actually perform. But if it comes down to it, if I need those buckets, if I want the win, if I need the win, then I'm going to do whatever it takes. So that's kind of my house rules is that, you know, if I am leaning into fake sim, as you might call it, that goes out the window when the game is on the line.
Yeah, I can completely agree with that. And you know what? And I'm not going to talk down about the way anybody else plays as long as they're enjoying the game. And that's also, you know, like they're not negatively impacting anybody else's experience, right?
Oh,
like if that's the way you want to play the game, you're having fun, then that's perfectly fine. But I do think that was a good question by Kid Cash, and I think that people think a lot more about that situation that he brought up. I think people are thinking about exploits a lot more often than they say, right? I think this is like a common thought process when we're playing these games.
Oh, definitely, especially with the competitive scene these days being so reliant on exploits. But there is a challenge in trying to play realistically, of course, and avoid those strategies that you know will work time and time again. Because as I said, that can get very boring. The other house rule I have is that I will accept a loss in a situation where I can, for a franchise mode, for example, that doesn't have auto saving on. If there's a loss, I have to weather that loss just as in real life. Having said that, there have been a couple of times that I've lost in a very frustrating manner that I've said, no, this is not going to count. I'm reloading the save. So I have gone against my house rules sometimes. But again, it's not hurting anyone else but my own pride. So yeah, that's, you know, you can bend those house rules and change those house rules to whatever you want. Like you said, it's all about having fun. So as long as that's what's happening at the end of the day, that's the most important part about having any kind of house rules.
Right. I mean, one thing that I'll do, and I'll admit this, if I'm playing against the, you know, even my brothers, but if I'm playing against the computer or whatnot, or my brothers, and I feel like I'm in a good position to win, and it's not like this super competitive scenario and whatnot, I'll pass up a shot with Carmelo Anthony in order to try to get Linus Kleiza's 10th point if he averaged 10 that year in the year that I'm using him, right? Like, I'm guilty of doing that sometimes. You know, if I want, I don't know, but what's a good example? J.R. Smith. Let's say J.R. Smith only has 10 or 12 points, and that season he averaged 15 or 16. I may pass up a shot and swing it over to J.R. Smith in order to do a quick drive or to take the shot himself, etc., in order to try to get him closer to his average if I'm feeling comfortable in that scenario. So it depends on the situation and, you know, who you're playing with, if you're playing against another human or you're playing against the computer, and just your total mindset on that motor game.
No, exactly. I've done the same thing. You know, when you want to get the stats, and sometimes that's not unrealistic either. That players will pass up shots to reward a teammate or whatnot. But it's, again, it's as long as you're having fun at the end of the day, that is the main thing.
100%. Just have fun. Have fun with the games, and if you're not negatively impacting anybody else's experience, then, you know, play the way you want.
So thank you to Kid Cash for sending in that question. Definitely a great topic to touch on there. But you also threw out a mailbag prompt, as you always do, Derek, for this week.
A lot of great responses. I want to say we had maybe half a dozen, including one that says, I don't want them to add anything until they fix what's wrong with the game. And how can you disagree with that? So I thought there was a lot of great responses, and thank you to the community again.
So the question you threw out there, you're in charge of creating a new offline mode for NBA 2K23. What are you creating? And as a side note, the mode can have optional online components if you would like. So before we get to those responses, I'll very quickly answer the question myself, Derek. And mine would simply be to bring back a legendary challenge mode, a historical challenge mode, like the Jordan Challenge or NBA's Greatest, just something that makes use of those all the historical content in the game. Obviously, that historical content has problems. We've talked about it before, copy and paste ratings and animations and tendencies and whatnot. But all the same, I mean, ideally, those would be fixed for those and optimized for those modes. But I'd just love to have that for the offline mode. You can absolutely add something like maybe it earns a one-time amount of VC or it unlocks some cards for my team. So you could certainly integrate it with other modes in that respect if you wanted to make it worthwhile for people to play. But that's what I'd love to see, those historical challenge modes come back for the offline gameplay.
I'm right there with you, and my thought process is along those same lines. While I do agree with Sticky Fingers on point, which we'll get to in a minute, if they were to add anything, I think that what much of basketball gaming world would love is a challenge mode. And I think that each year it would be cool if they did like a different player each year for each release. So, you know, you have the Kobe challenge mode, right? Next with his, you know, you have to score 81 points or you have to do you know, his historic feat in three quarters. I think that was against Dallas. And or you have to, you know, beat these certain teams, you know, in a seven game series, etc., you know, to, you know, go over like his five titles or something like that. And then maybe the next year you can do Dirk, and then maybe the next year you could do Julius Erving, or, you know, there's so many legends and there's so many players. You could have these challenge modes dedicated to one player and just never run out of, dedicated to different players and just never run out of content. Maybe you do a few players each year. Maybe you can do the Kobe challenge, the Dirk challenge, and the Wade challenge, and they're all part of one of their releases. You could do three players, four players, five players, etc. So I think that would be really cool. And like you said, maybe you can unlock, you know, players for my team by completing this mode. Maybe you can upload your scores to, remember I said the optional online component, maybe you can upload your feet and your results and everything online onto like a leaderboard or something like that. Like, how long did it take you to achieve this? You know, how many points did you score, et cetera? You know, what was your average margin of victory, et cetera? So there's just so many different things that you could do with it. And maybe you could have an online component as well and a local co-op component too. So like maybe you could enjoy the mode locally with somebody and connect with somebody online if you want to and have them help you with those challenges. So definitely we have not exhausted all of the ideas, not even close, for offline mode capability.
No, we definitely haven't. And you could unlock things like an ABA ball. You could unlock retro filters. Imagine being able to not just be able to use those retro filters in Play Now or My NBA, My League, etc., but you could also take them into My Team. You could maybe unlock retro rules that then you can have as your house rules for online games in My Team, that if you unlock those, you can then say, okay, if you come and play on my court, it's ones and twos, or it's 70s rules, 60s rules, there's no three-pointers, things like that. So there's a lot of things that you could do and still integrate it with those online modes if there needs to be incentive to play through them or earn VC or earn MT or earn some kind of reward that is then tangible apart from the simple fun you have. I mean, that's reward enough for me, but as far as incentive for the wider gaming population, the wider gaming community and 2K themselves, there does need to be that that incentive there. But there's a lot you could do.
Yeah, I mean, how many different unlockables could you think of that they could implement in those modes that people would be, you know, wanting to go after?
Hundreds.
There's so many.
Yeah.
So I think that the biggest reason why we don't have a new mode like that is because they're so focused on the online modes and pushing everybody to those online modes and those online modes that require VC in order to progress, or they encourage the use of VC and make you feel like you need VC in order to progress in those modes. So I think that's the real reason why we haven't had a new offline mode in so long.
I mean, if it doesn't make money, if it doesn't generate recurrent revenue, doesn't have microtransaction mechanics, then it's not going to be a high priority for 2K. I mean, the developers might want it and be very keen to do it, but that's not what the suits want.
Right, exactly. So unfortunately, I don't think we're going to have anything like that in the near future from NBA 2K. However, that's something where a company like EA Sports, if they brought NBA Live back, that's where they could capitalize. They could put a unique, fun, even possibly cooperative, with optional online co-op, you know, offline mode in there, that really, you know, catches people's eyes. They really have fun with it. They start uploading those videos to YouTube about the mode, et cetera. Those YouTube videos get hundreds of thousands up to millions of views. It shines a positive light on the NBA Live series. So that's something where NBA Live, EA Sports, NBA Live could capitalize if they were to return.
Undoubtedly. And you look at something like Court Battles in Live 19. I played a little bit of that, and that definitely had some promise, an idea like that.
Right, and there was a lot. How many people were uploading about Court Battles at that time? A lot.
Very popular.
Like upon release, it was very popular. There was a lot of people uploading their, you know, the court designs, and, you know, their highlights and everything. So, yeah, that's just a small example.
So that's what comes to mind for us. And as for your suggestions, well, Derek, it's time to open up the mailbag.
To the mailman, the pump fake. What an unbelievable dunk!
So first up, we have Sticky Fingers at Sticky Fingers FR on Twitter. In my opinion, no need of a new mode. We need real work dedicated to offline players, AI, animations, gameplay, roster accuracy, not BS about online work makes offline better. But we know what will happen, a few new main menu backgrounds, new pregame 2K NBA 3D animations. And yeah, I mean, that is certainly a fair point, is that before we add anything new to fix what's already there, I certainly get where he's coming from on that.
He's not wrong. Right. I mean, this is the way I would it, like if somebody gave me the option. OK, they said you can have a new offline mode, a shiny new offline mode, or they can squash the idea of an offline mode and, you know, put better foot planning in the game. So less skating. They can, you know, improve the face up game and post game. So it's reactive and there's less suction and the players don't drop the ball all the time, et cetera. You can make it so there's less canned animations. The game flows better. The rosters are accurate for the classic and classic teams and the all-time teams and the retro content in general and my team and everything, the you know, the signatures, the vitals, the tendencies, etc. If somebody gave me the choice of the two, I'm squashing that offline mode idea. I'm like, this is, you know, let's fix that gameplay. Let's fix those legacy issues. Let's get all of those, the right people, and there's a lot of them out there, the right people on that retro content and have them make it shine and make the teams and players play right, etc. Of course I'm going to do that. So I think that my response to him, while I agree with him, I do understand that not everybody dislikes the direction of NBA 2K right now, right? And the question, I'm glad he answered that, but there are people out there that do like NBA 2K22 and like the gameplay direction that, you know, are ready for offline modes, are ready for, you know, more content, even if the gameplay were to stay the same. Unfortunately, I think the gameplay has definitely taken a back seat to, you know, the online connective modes and, you know, the shiny, you know, gambling mechanics and all the, you know, your fit and all of that stuff. But yeah, you know, I agree with him, but I still wanted to see what people had to say.
Well, I think new content is still appreciated, even if it's not quite as detailed as we want or accurate. I mean, I still like seeing new historical teams being added because it's more content to work with, to play with, and also to mod. So it never goes astray. And to make a comparison to the online scene, a lot of people were asking for a new park, a new neighborhood after the first couple of years that it came in. They repeated that the 2K20 neighborhood was very similar to the 2K19 neighborhood. And people, oh, we want a new map, we want a new setting. And while it shouldn't be a priority, and to Sticky Fingers' point, fixing the gameplay should be the priority of adding new bells and whistles that ultimately don't matter if the gameplay isn't up to scratch. People still appreciate a fresh coat of paint. They appreciate something new in the game. So changing up the neighborhood or the city or whatnot, it gives people something new to enjoy. So I do get that from that perspective. And speaking of online, you know, brings up the online work makes offline better. No, I would certainly disagree with any assertions, you know, with all due respect to developers who say that, because we've seen adjustments for online play really affect the offline experience in a very negative way. You look at Live 19 with the what they did with jump shots, for example. You know, they tune that for online play, but it doesn't work with offline play because the CPU is much better at sticking with their man and taking away that green release. So adjusting it for the online scene, adjusting gameplay for the online scene, does have a negative effect on the offline play.
Yeah, but even the online play is heavily criticized today.
Oh, sure.
So it's not just even good. What the stuff that they're implementing isn't even good for online play. See, it's not even good for skill gap in that respect. In fact, it's probably the least skill gap they've ever had in online play because of all of the artificial boosts. We're up to 80 badges now. It's just loaded with artificial boosts and cheesing and whatnot. So, and then we added the faulty alley-oop meter and the contact dunk meter and everything. So even the stuff that they're implementing for online isn't even good for online. And then it further deteriorates offline gameplay. So 100%. I definitely agree with you and Sticky as far as like the online, disagreeing with the whole online, implementation for online makes offline better. In fact, in a big way, I think it's the opposite.
That is the irony, that it's supposed to be fixing the online at the expense of offline, which it sometimes does, but then also the online play isn't up to scratch either. So yeah, that is definitely the irony there. But next up we have Leon, at Leon Belcazo on Twitter. Shout out to you, former NLSC team member, longtime member of our community, suggests My Career Mode, but in first-person view. Now, that's a very interesting idea. I remember the wish list of the late 90s, Derek, talked about wanting to have a first-person view in NBA Live. And of course, at the time, they said a Doom-style first-person view because Doom was the big shooter at the time, of course. And it's a very interesting idea to me, and there's merit in it, but I think it could get very dizzying and very disorientating to try and play a basketball game from first-person view, because I think your head would constantly have to be on a swivel to look back and forth and to catch passes. You know, does your head automatically swivel to look at teammates? And you know, do you have to do it manually to catch passes? I mean, it's a very interesting idea. But yeah, I reckon that would be very difficult to play.
Yeah, wow. There's a lot to wrap your head around with this. I think it's a great idea, and I'm sure they've thought of it, right? Like, I'm sure companies have talked about this. I mean, you have games that came out for, like, I think it was 360, what was it called? Backbreaker Football, where you're seeing, it's like a first-person view of the action. And let's say you're playing, you know, as the quarterback, you're, like, seeing through his helmet, right? So it's like you're literally, like, basically, like, being the player on the floor without the VR experience. I think that that's the tough part. You're trying to make this a VR experience with a headset, I can definitely see where, like with eyewear and whatnot, I can definitely see where that would be a big draw for a lot of people, where you have a full My Career virtual reality experience. I think it would be a lot tougher to implement, like what you were kind of alluding to, you know, trying to use a gamepad for a first person view, you know, while you're on the floor, you know, turning, you know, left and right, and you know, being able to see the whole floor and be able to control the actions and everything. I think that would be pretty damn hard to implement. Now, there's definitely been games in the past that have tried things, even games like in the mid late 2000s, I believe, where you know your view is from the bench, right? And that always looks cool, right? Where you're viewing the game from the bench, or you're viewing it from the coach's eyes, whether it be on like a football game or a basketball game and everything. But I think it's just a lot harder to implement if you're if you're trying to control the player with a gamepad in a first person view.
Oh, definitely. And to that point, in my career, when you're on the bench, you do go into a first-person view and you can look back and forth and watch the game. I simulate to my next appearance because I don't want to sit there and watch. I want to play. But you do have that option. And, of course, coach mode, I believe, that's been in 2K, lets you do that as well. Like you were saying, you get to see from the eyes of the coach and a coach from the sideline, be the coach. But it would be very difficult in that traditional gameplay sense with a controller in your hands. But I didn't think about that at first, but you're absolutely right, is that as a VR experience, that would be really cool. As an alternate VR micro experience, that would be much more viable. So it's one of those ideas that you can never throw out, but it would have to be done so carefully. And I don't think you could do it in that traditional sense, because I think a lot of people would find that very... there'd be a lot of motion sickness, I think, because a lot of people don't like first-person games because of that.
Let's put it this way. The way I'll answer the question is, I think it's a great idea if they were able to implement it as a VR experience with the eyewear, and make the whole My Career mode centered around that and make that like an option, right? Like, oh, do you want to experience this, you know, with your gamepad? No, you know, your regular My Career, or do you want to do the VR experience? So maybe that could be in the future. You never know, because I do think that that would work.
What about if it goes into first-person view on free throws or things like that?
I think it would have to be all or nothing.
Okay, yeah. No,
it's, yeah, that's just I look at it. I think that would be just...
A bit gimmicky? A bit too gimmicky?
It would be, yeah. I think it would be. I think it would have to be the whole experience.
So next up is King J Mace, at King J Mace on Twitter, of course, participating in the College Hoops 2K8 tournament and a very enthusiastic Parsec player. A full streetball My Career, completely separate from VC, lets us own attributes like how we used to and get nice organically. Yeah, a separate, whether it's talking about a streetball My Career or even just an offline NBA My Career, separating online and offline, I think, is something a lot of people would love to see. There is an advantage in having that connected experience, Derek, obviously, because you only have to grind up one player and then take them online, and you can use that same improved player online and offline. Of course, this leads to trying to find a build that is fun to play with both online and offline. That doesn't always happen. And of course, then you have the offline experience affected by online, and then when the servers go down, the whole mode disappears because the online components are gone. So that is the problem. But having an online and offline version of My Career, being able to choose that, whether it is a streetball My Career offline or the NBA My Career offline, I'm totally on board with that.
Yeah, I mean, like I said in my reply to him, you know, it's like almost the idea of like NBA Streets meets NBA 2K meets NBA 2K7's 24/7 mode. Like, I can see where he's going with that idea, and I think that a lot of people would have fun with it. I mean, we've seen the mods out there before too, with like you know, like the trampolines. Like, they made it like it's like a quasi like NBA Street meets NBA 2K game. You know, like where they're pulling the animations from the neighborhood, from the cages and whatnot, where the players are doing this outlandish street stuff, that like stuff that you would see on like NBA Street Volume 2, etc. So the animations like that are already in the game. They just probably have to touch them up a little bit here and there in order to make it really fit for like an NBA Street My Career type mode. But yeah, there's no reason why they couldn't have a separate mode designed for street play and street atmosphere with a street storyline, etc. I think it's actually a good idea. Obviously that wouldn't be my first choice as far as like my gaming habits, but if they were able to implement something like that and do it well and it didn't detract from the sim 5-on-5 experience, then I would be all for it and I'd play it.
Once again, the big roadblock is that mode is not going to make 2K any money, which is why they won't have any incentive to do it. And it's a damn shame, because again, a lot of people would like to avoid the online scene. They don't want to worry about clothes or any of the, or unlocking backpacks or unlocking jetpacks, which you can also do, or mascot costumes or things. And I'm not saying that you can't have fun with that, but it's not for everyone. It's not the rewards that everybody wants. And certainly having that online component does ruin the mode in the long run, or indeed gets rid of it. I mean, look, as I said, I've been playing 2K14 My Career because a lot of that mode is still available offline. The servers have been offline for almost a decade now, and yet I'm still enjoying that mode. I'm still able to play that mode and enjoy it as much as I have. And that's just something that's disappeared over the years, to the point now that My Career is not even playable offline. So having some kind of offline career mode, whatever it may be, and bringing back those ideas, which are very nostalgic, are they not? The things like 24/7 mode and whatnot, and the crib. But if you bring back stuff that is nostalgic like that, I think people really do enjoy it.
No, and King J. Mace, from all my dealings with him, he's, even though he's a young guy, he's definitely all about the nostalgia. You know, he loves revisiting the older titles. He is just absolutely loving this College Hoops 2K8 tournament, and he wants to be involved in all of these retro tournaments. So I know that he's all about that stuff. Like, I know he's all about the, like, NBA 2K7 24/7 mode and stuff like that. So kind of neat to have him, you know, in the community, you know, using Parsec so much, and then also, you know, playing in these tournaments with these retro games.
So speaking of career modes and whatnot, La Dolce PS Vita at Oh The Static on Twitter says, honestly, this might be a weird pick, but I love the franchise mode setting in Madden, where you can create a player and place them on a team, assigning what pick and round they were taken in, with unique perks based on that. Basically my player, but stripped down. And you know, Derek, a lot of people are playing My League or My NBA with player lock, and that is their, that's their alternative to not having an offline My Career. They'll simulate the My Career experience as we used to with franchise mode way back in the day, way before we had career modes, where they'll be locked on a player, and they'll create their player, and they'll kind of have them get better over the season. They'll set up a formula to increase the ratings themselves so that the player develops at a reasonable rate, and that's their alternative to having an offline My Career. So something like that, you know, that's not a bad idea either.
Hey, you know what? You know, when you do that in my league, remember my brother, for several seasons where we play on the same team, he locks on a player, you know, all season. And then he'll use the bench replacement for that player. You know what? You know, you're still generating stats throughout the season. You're still progressing. You can still set goals. You can still, you know, sign contracts, all of that stuff. So I can see why that scenario would be appealing if it was in like a official My Career capacity. And, you know, you could bypass all of that stuff that you don't like, the storyline stuff that you don't care about, etc. So, no, that definitely makes sense.
But it does speak to the desire to have that offline My Career in some way, creating a legend, of course, where you take control of an NBA player, as they had for a couple of years there, and play through the career mode as an existing NBA player, is something that people enjoyed back in the day. And again, not to beat a dead horse here, but like we said so many times, if it doesn't make money, then it's not a priority, sadly.
Right, and that's unfortunate, because a lot of these ideas that people are pitching, a lot of the responses to this mailbag question, the chances of them being implemented are almost zero, and it's basically because of that.
So next up we have Mahmood at Mahmood_Studios on Twitter. Not a new mode, but just a few quality control things to really make My League better. Allow the option to force win games for any team and set the final score. The sim engine will compile stats. Allow jumping backward in the game inside the scoring log in settings. Update the rules to accurately reflect modern NBA signings. Implement sign and trades, multi-year two-ways, trading while injured, etc. Update trade logic accordingly. Allow customization of crowd clothing, tucking, untucking jerseys on individual players, and implement undershirt sleeve length as well as arm sleeve length, much like shorts length. One last thing that I'm not sure will ever come is the ability to import PA sounds and have sliders readily available from the last three you downloaded. You know, one thing that jumps out to me immediately, Derek, and yes, adding those functions and those extra features to the existing modes and the existing franchise modes is definitely a great idea. But trading while injured, because this is an issue that goes back pretty much every single sim game that I can think of, won't allow you to trade players when they're injured. Either you'll get a message that says, we are not interested in trading for injured players, and that will always be the response, or you'll get a message that says, you cannot trade or release an injured player. And this is a restriction, a rule, that is only in place in video games. There is no rule in the real salary cap rules of the NBA, no rule in the real NBA that says you cannot trade an injured player. In fact, there's a lot of trades that involve injured players because they're at the end of their career, they're not expected to play again, but now they become salary dumps. Or teams are willing to take that chance on that injured player coming back because they just want to get rid of somebody or again, get cap relief or something like that. They will trade for an injured player for whatever reason. There's no restriction against it, but it's always there in games. So little things like that, I think cleaning up would be great. And also that option of being able to control the winners and losers and have the sim engine generate the stats if you want to create scenarios and whatnot in your franchise mode. Yeah, I'm all for those ideas.
Right, a perfect example of the injured player trade thing happening in real life is, you know, Bol Bol. The Celtics traded for him while he was hurt. right? He entered our roster, and he was with us for a couple of weeks, and then we ended up training the injured Bol Bol to another team, right? So Bol Bol was getting passed around as an injured player. There was no rule that says that you couldn't trade Bol Bol. So no, I definitely agree with that. I think that's a limitation in the game that shouldn't exist, especially when they're trying to be so sim about it with all the different options in the video games. So definitely agree there. He brought up things like shirt tucked, untucked, etc. There's definitely more they could do customization wise, as far as, you know, giving the user more of an ability to customize the way their players look in the game, whether they're playing the NBA modes or whether they're, you know, playing in, you know, My Career, etc. You know, something as simple as, you know, a player playing shirtless. I know this is, there's probably reasons why they don't do this, but a lot of people like having like a shirtless player, you know, on the blacktop. Like you would see, like if you're, you know, it's a hot summer day, etc. And, you know, you go and you play, you know, you go to an outdoor court and there's people playing and they're playing shirts and skins, right? Like, that's the thing. Or even in the rec, you know, players play shirts and skins. So there's probably a reason why they don't have that in there. But being able to have a player be shirtless while they play, or, you know, have a, the ability to, you know, have their shirt untucked or tucked, etc. So I see where he's coming from with that as well. The other stuff that he was mentioning, as far as like scheduling, like jumping back on the calendar or jumping into a game already in progress on the calendar, stuff like that. I think that you can do some of that customization with like things like NBA 2K tools, if I'm not mistaken. So with some of the modding tools, but not like in the games by default. So I definitely see where he's coming from as far as wanting further customization.
Well, bringing that customization out of modding and into the in-game functionality is definitely something that we want to see in a lot of areas when it comes to roster editing and whatnot. You can actually go without a shirt in the playground, but it's something you have to unlock. It's always been a MyRep reward or whatever reward system they have in the game at any particular year.
Right, but you can't take that into Blacktop, right? Like, you can't take that into offline Blacktop, which I think is kind of what he's also getting, what he's getting at.
Exactly, yeah. It's only been an unlockable reward for a My Player. It's not been something you can do in Blacktop or outside of My Career like that. So yeah, so that's what it comes down to getting. And so obviously, the functionality is there. So you it is possible, but it's been something that's been locked as a My Player reward. So yeah, adding it as an option in game so that you could have situations in Blacktop where you do shirts and skins, and of course that's great for modding and whatnot. So yeah, I'm all for having that customization. And again, allowing that is not going to take away from My Player. From My Career, because a lot of people get into that zero-sum thinking, Derek, where they feel that if some other mode benefits, that somehow hurts my mode. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's ridiculous. No, because if anything, if they included, you know, more customization options in Blacktop and whatnot and roster editing and everything, people are just going to spend more time on the game. Right. And isn't that what they want? The problem is that they probably think that it's going to make them less willing to spend money on VC and say, hey, you know what, instead of being able to go shirtless in My Career, you know what, I don't want to spend that money. I'm going to, in order to unlock this, or I don't want to spend the time to achieve the ability to unlock this, I'm just going to go into Blacktop and I'm going to play shirtless there, right? So maybe that's the way they think about it, but you know, I would think that the company would want people to spend as much time on the games as possible, and you know, adding those features to offline modes, you know, makes it so they spend more time on the game.
Oh, definitely, from the company's perspective, that is absolutely what happens. But I'm talking about other gamers actually having that zero sum thinking and thinking, okay, if they add that to Blacktop, I have to unlock this in My Career, and you can just use this anytime in Blacktop. That's not fair. But it's a completely different situation, and you shouldn't be against other modes benefiting, because that is still a reward for you to unlock. That is still an incentive for you to play through and grind in My Career to get that reward, and that's different, and that's probably more satisfying than somebody just playing a random Blacktop game with shirts and skins. So it's one of those things where if somebody benefits in a mode that you don't play, you get upset about that because somehow you feel that's taking away from the mode you play. There's too much of that thinking in the community.
I can agree with that. No, I can definitely see, you know, people, you know, making that comment or having that line of thinking, and that's unfortunate.
So finally, we have Philly I'm 2002 at Philly I'm 2K on Twitter. I would love the idea of going back to the past and starting from 1984, for example, with proper rosters and all players available. In general, it's necessary to fix bugs and bring back start-to-day mode. 2K should improve MyNBA, so gamers want to stick on MyNBA longer, and that they simulate multiple seasons, 10, 20 or more. Too many 80-plus players and smarter CPU. What about introducing a similar feature like in My Career Storylines, like MyGM, only the additional possibility to have a personal life outside of basketball, social life, etc. Before they even consider adding this feature, they should absolutely, obviously, fix other things. So yeah, I mean, imagine if we could go back to 1984, for example, and play through to today. That would be amazing. Of course, licensing issues become an issue there, and having so many placeholders in the league would be... I mean, you could edit it, presumably, but it would be a lot of work to have fun, and some people definitely would, and if you can pre-edit that, then obviously that's something that people would do, but that is a big hurdle to overcome, the licensing issues. But man, a lot of people have said that over the years, Derek, and that would be amazing, that idea.
With the lack of licensing that they would have for so many players... While they do have the licensing to the teams, they wouldn't have the licensing to all the courts and stadiums and everything. So it's a huge obstacle. Like, I don't think they could even get through one classic season fully and make it, you know, even remotely accurate. So I don't think – maybe there's a scenario that they could put together where it's generated player names and the presentation and everything is back to, like, I don't know, 1984 or the 90s or whatever. But it's, you know, generated players, right? And maybe – yeah, maybe even generated teams. I don't know how this would even work. Obviously, it would be amazing, but there's absolutely no way that they could possibly do it and get all the licenses for the stadiums, the courts, the players. They couldn't even get half of them, right? Like, you couldn't even put half the teams together for so many of those classic seasons. So, unfortunately, as much as this would be amazing and it would be an amazing career idea, amazing mode idea, etc., the chances of it happening are zero.
And when it comes to storylines, because that's something that MyGM has experimented with over the years as well. A couple of the iterations have had some storylines and RPG elements. So that is something they could explore, but I do think you need to make that optional, because some people want the sandbox experience, some people want the RPG experience, and... I think if you're going to go for one or the other, you kind of go for the sandbox one, because that's the one that seems to be most popular. I don't think a lot of gamers want to have the storylines forced upon them. I think more people can have fun and make up their own storylines and when they're not there, as opposed to people who have to contend with storylines when they don't want them.
Right, there'd have to be a way to shut that off. There'd have to just be an option to shut off the storylines or keep them on. Because some people do like them, as you said. But there's also a lot of people that, you know, don't, and they shouldn't have to be, you know, be forced into that.
But of course, if it's a separate mode, then much like it was with My League and MyGM, that's the other solution.
Right. But I just don't see even like a really dumbed down version. I just don't see how that they would be able to implement that.
But as he also mentions, fixing bugs and getting that extra depth in there. Again, I think a lot of people, you know, they've got creative ideas for modes, but... and we can certainly relate to them on this point, is that they do want to see those improvements to what's in the game before packing more in. But at the same time, you also want some new stuff so that it does feel like there's that fresh coat of paint. So once again, it's kind of a balancing act, adding some new stuff to feel like there is new stuff in the game, but also working on the stuff that's already there to feel that it's not being neglected. And if you look at NBA Live over the years, one of their big problems, which 2K has kind of avoided for the most part, or certainly did for many years, was adding something and they're not really doing anything with it. You look at how they bring in franchise mode, but it was a few years before they revamped it into dynasty mode. And dynasty mode came in, and it didn't really get improvements until the push dynasty came in NBA Live 08 for 360 and PS3. And then, of course, the PC version stopped after that year. But then they went backwards on that as well. They kind of had this great idea that was in there, but they never really built upon it. They had a great foundation that they didn't build upon. And 2K, conversely, did a much better job once they got the association in there, making that better and better, the association 2.0, which of course then became MyGM and MyLeague and MyNBA. So 2K in general over the years has done a better job of building on those modes and my team and my career and whatnot, whereas Live has had these great ideas. Sometimes they've been the first to implement those ideas, and WNBA is another great example that they've brought it in and not built upon it. So we do want to see the existing modes built upon, fixed, improved, enhanced, made much deeper before we see any new additions. But at the same time, we also want to see those new additions so we've got something new to get excited about.
Yeah, last thing I guess I'll say about this is nobody's expecting a perfect game. Like, none of us play these games and expect a perfect game. We don't expect all the animations to play out perfectly. We don't expect us to have 100% complete control all of the time. We don't expect the game to have zero bugs, all of that stuff. You know, basically what we're looking for is a game that has, you know, that is fun, that gives us mostly having control over the action, and one that is overall fair to the gamer and just has minimal frustration overall. So I'll say this again, you know, as far as Sticky said, and the in that most recent response that you read, of course we want the bugs to be fixed. We want people to pay attention to the rosters and, you know, and make sure that they you know, that they're as accurate as possible and that the players play right on the floor. But Sticky would also say the same thing. He's not expecting a perfect game. What he's expecting is a game that's fun, that makes sense, that gives him control overall, and that doesn't give him so much frustration.
Completely agree. And some great suggestions for new modes here. Once again, our listeners coming through with the goods, Derek.
No, awesome. I look forward to putting out the prompt every week because I know that we get, you know, we're going to get a lot of great responses, and people are into the podcast and they're into the community questions. So yeah, thank you for all the responses.
Absolutely, and stay tuned for that prompt each and every week. We love hearing from you and your answers to our various questions about basketball gaming. This is why we do the podcast. We love basketball gaming, Derek. We love getting on here and talking about it and hearing these ideas from the community, because it's great to hear people that share our passion for basketball gaming.
Yeah, basketball gaming doesn't get old for us. Like, that definitely hasn't gotten old for me, and this year has been really exciting with all the gaming sessions that I've had with people.
We love it so much, we'll even give NBA Live 07 another go.
Yeah, and next time we're going to be mic'd up.
Oh, that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it would be hilarious to be mic'd up. So maybe next time we'll be mic'd up and we can stream it, because I think a lot of people would get into that.
Definitely stay tuned for that and everything else we do with the NLSC. But as for this week's NLSC podcast, that has brought us to the end of this week's show. We thank you for tuning in. The NLSC podcast comes out every Sunday on the NLSC, which is nba-live.com. You can also tune in on our YouTube channel or find us on any of the podcatching apps and platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, etc. Wherever you find your podcasts, you can tune into the show. And we also want to connect with you on social media. So Derek, what are your handles? And do you have any other final words for our listeners this week?
No, thank you for all the submissions to the NLC Top 10 Plays of the Week. Thank you for participating in the College Hoops 2K8 tournament and all the tournaments that I've been running for the site. And also thank you for being so active in responding to each week's mailbag question that I put out. So thank you to the community for all of that. You can reach me on Twitter at D43.84 or at D43G. I'm the most active on Twitter. I'm on the NLSC as a team member, D43, and I'm on YouTube, D43.
I am Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on Twitter. The NLSC is on Facebook and Twitter at the NLSC. We are on Instagram, NLSC Basketball. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/NBA Live Series Center. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, NBA-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that's all for this week. So thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.